So we can begin by doing three prostrations. There's no requirement that you join in, but more than welcome to. Okay. Om Namo Manjushriye, Namo Sushriye, Namo Uttamashriye, Soha. Om Namo Manjushriye, Namo Sushriye, Namo Uttamashriye, Soha. O Namo Manjushriye, Namo Sushriye, Namo Uttamashriye, Soha. Begin with our prayers in the prayer book on page 34. We'll read through the prayers on page 34 and 35 in English, with taking refuge in bodhicitta repeated three times. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happinesses free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulate since beginning this time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence, and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merit and those of all others to the great enlightenment. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kam Niryata Yami. The children may go to their classes. Well, I think, yeah, okay. Which ones do we, yeah. Okay, sorry kids, false alarm. Back on your cushions. Okay, you want to lead those? Mani Padme Om, 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 Mani Padme Om. Om Mani Padme Hum. Taritu Taritu Soha. Om Taritu Taritu Soha. Om Jare Tu Jare Tu Re So Ha. 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 Okay, now you can go, I think. Wait, no, yes, now you can go. Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm Robbie Watkins. I've been a member of Kadampa Center since the early 90s. And in the absence of Geshe Gelug and Geshe Sampo, our resident teachers, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel and putting various suffering creatures up here to lead the discussion. So I'm leading the discussion this morning. Do you have anyone who's here for the very first time today? Okay, a couple of you. Glad to have you here. I think the discussion will be general enough that you can participate in it. We're not going to jump into any hardcore Buddhism. This is, I think Sunday mornings are billed as Dharma for a Happy Life. So if anybody has the answer to that question, you could please raise your hands right now. But that's okay, Chris. Yeah. Well, that's part of it. Okay. Okay. Everybody can go home now. Yeah. Thank you, Chris. Anyway, we're going to begin with some meditation, and Don Brown is going to lead the meditation this morning.
So, one of the things that Lama Zopa Rinpoche at the Light of the Path retreat said is that whatever we do at the center, whatever classes, programs, whatever it needs, we really need to get a strong bodhicitta motivation. Now, that's a Sanskrit word that means the mind of enlightenment, awakening mind. But it's an attitude, basically, our goal is to perfectly guide and help others to enlightenment, and the method to do that is to develop ourselves, to eliminate our faults and develop our good qualities. So that's not easy to do, obviously. So, and this attitude is contradictory to our ordinary self-centered way of thinking. So there are ways, guided meditations, to help us get into the ballpark of at least thinking this way. So if you can sit up straight and take a couple of moments to bring your awareness to your body, either the rising and falling of your abdomen or the sensation of the breath at the nose, whatever works for you. You can count your breathing up to 10 and then start again, but just to bring your mind to focus and take a break from the normal conceptual mind that just goes on and on unchallenged. So we want to just bring the mind to one point for just a couple of minutes. depends on the foundation for developing this awakening mind. Again, it's completely contradictory to our ordinary way of thinking. That's why it's such a powerful attitude to have for spiritual practice. But the foundation is to have what's called equanimity, which is a kind of a level-mindedness toward the so-called friends, strangers, and enemies. Usually we have attachment to the friend and aversion to the so-called the people that we don't like, have some resistance to, and indifference to the strangers, which are the vast majority of beings. So, realizing that all of these labels are that, just mere labels, and are changeable. Try to develop some level of equanimity toward these three kinds of beings. The so-called friend can become the enemy, the enemy can become the friend, and the stranger can become either friend or enemy. So nothing is fixed. And the next contemplation is to see the equality of self and others. So we think that just as I want happiness and do not want to suffer, the people around me in this room and beyond this room in our community and then in the whole, on the whole planet, in fact, and maybe beyond, all living beings want happiness and do not want to suffer. We're all exactly the same in wanting happiness and not wanting to suffer. Something very important and even intimate that we know about everybody. We're all equally, it's all equally important to us. So we're all, in this very fundamental way, we're all equal. Equally wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. And the next contemplation has to do with the faults of the self-cherishing, selfish attitude. And from the Buddha Dharma perspective, selfishness, which looks like a friend, is in fact our worst enemy. Self-cherishing selfishness is the source of all the suffering from the beginning of beginningless time until now. All the negative karma that's ever been created, all the diseases, all the wars, all the things that are problematic that have ever happened to us or other beings is, if you look at the root cause is this mistaken, self-cherishing, selfish attitude. Killing and stealing, adultery, lying, slander, harsh, frivolous talk, you know, attachment, pride, jealousy, anger, fear, everything comes down to this real fundamental mistake that we make. And the source of all happiness is its opposite, which is cherishing others. And the next contemplation is exchanging self-cherishing for cherishing others, which is basically, instead of thinking just of ourselves, we exchange the attitude of self-cherishing for cherishing others. So the attitude is we get up in the morning for others. We go to work for others. We try to look our best to be healthy, to make good choices in our lives, constantly being aware of other beings and how our choices affect others. So we want to, the attitude that we want to be coming from is cherishing others. And then the Bodhisattva's attitude, which is considered to be sort of heroic and a sort of amazing way to think. Of course, it's an attitude. It would have been done by now, but the Bodhisattva's attitude is, I take personal responsibility for every living being to guide them from whatever state of confusion and dissatisfaction, pain, suffering, wherever they are. It's my job to guide them from their present state of suffering to supreme happiness, enlightenment. It's my job alone. This is the Bodhisattva's vow. So we, again, so hard to even think this way, but this is the attitude that we want to begin to cultivate. I am personally responsible for the happiness of all beings. And then the bodhicitta attitude, which follows that, is that we realize we don't have it together. We don't have the skill to guide even ourselves to enlightenment. We have lots of bad attitudes, bad karmic imprints, bad sort of impulses, negative impulses that get us in trouble all the time. So we need to transform our mind to develop our good qualities, compassion, wisdom, skillful means, power, all the qualities of an enlightened being, and to eliminate our faults. We want to aim for supreme enlightenment in order to help others. This is why, this is the attitude, the Mahayana attitude, the attitude that's sort of the key point in all of Tibetan Buddhism. It comes down to this attitude that we practice for others, not just for ourselves. Our happiness is the byproduct of dedicating our lives and our practice fully to others.
Thank you, Doc. As I mentioned earlier, this series of Sunday sessions is billed as Dharma for a Happy Life. Chris has the answer. Thank you, Chris. The rest of, or some of us, including myself, are still searching. What is it that's keeping us from being happy? And what can the Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha, offer us to help us in that pursuit? As Don mentioned, we all want to be happy. We all want to be suffering, avoid suffering. That's something that's common to every single human being. Wanting to be happy is not selfish. It's not self-centered, but we tend to go about it in ways that can be very selfish and self-centered. And part of the Buddhist path is looking very closely at how we're living our lives and really being willing to be honest with ourselves about the results of our actions. Is this really making me happy? I tell myself that it is, but is this making me happy? Is the way I'm leading my life leading towards happiness, or is it leading towards more suffering this endless cycle of repeating actions over and over again that doesn't give us the results that we want. So there are many ways to approach this topic of how to be happy according to the Buddhist teachings. Certainly, as Chris says, an understanding of reality, an understanding of emptiness is part of the path, but that's a little beyond what we're going to be discussing today. I wanted to start by talking about attachment, the idea of attachment, because that's a big issue for most of us. Does anybody know what the Buddhist definition of attachment is? Or just give me a definition of attachment, whether it's a Buddhist definition or not. And we're going to try and pass the mics around because there are millions of people around the world who are streaming us and listening to whatever you may say. So, mic here, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when I view attachment in my own personal life, I view it as clinging on to something good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it could be something that brings me pleasure or something that even brings me pain. So craving and clinging and always yearning for that. And what I mean by pain is, you know, you can be attached to that as well, and you can cling on to that and the result of that, and that can make you a victim if you continue to cling on to that.
Yeah, so you used two important words there, clinging and craving, you know, very much tied up with attachment.
Is it exaggerating the good qualities and then wanting to have more?
That's the textbook definition of attachment in Buddhism. It's that mind state that exaggerates the good qualities of something we like, that projects onto it qualities that it doesn't have. Most basically, the ability to make us happy. You know, we think, this person, I like this person, but I also apply onto that layer, that person can make me happy. If they speak to me with kind words, if they spend time with me, if they agree with how I think. And that is a quality that is not there in that other person. That other person may be a good person, but they do not possess that innate ability to make me happy. Similarly, we'll get to, just a minute. Things that there's negative attachment or aversion, where we exaggerate or project onto an object bad qualities, particularly the quality of making me unhappy. And again, in a relationship, we very frequently say, you made me unhappy. No, the other person did not make me unhappy. That was something that came from my own mind, but I'm projecting that quality, that power, onto that person. Okay, so the Buddhist definition of attachment is exaggerating the good qualities of an object, of a person, an experience, an emotion. Okay, which is not saying we don't like or dislike things, but then we throw all this other stuff on top of it. That's where all the problems come from. I see someone in the back had their hand up.
Just more of a question. Instead of adding to the definition.
Okay.
If I may ask a question.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. And this is, I guess, open to whomever. What is the relationship between, and I guess just expounding there on what you just, your last comment was, between the concerns of attachment with relationships? What is that connection there?
I'm not quite clear on the question.
So attachment in Buddhism, from my understanding, is that it's not a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
So when you
attachment causes problems. Yeah, and we'll
correct.
Get into
and so
that.
What is that dynamic like with respect to relationships? Like, how are you supposed to mitigate that?
What's a non-attached relationship look like?
With someone you're supposed to love and care for.
With someone that you're in love with. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Anybody want to take a stab at that? What's a relationship based on love that's free of attachment? What's that like?
Going back in my head about good and bad ones,
mm-hmm.
where it was, you know, myself clinging to every mood of the other person and not even thinking of myself,
mm-hmm.
and me being up and down like a, you know, like a yo-yo.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just in it to actually just want the other person to be happy, and if you're at peace with that, it's like the word metta, which means gentle friend, mm-hmm. and I think that's the basis for a good relationship.
Let's see, I think we had a hand up here. Yeah, that's good. I mean, it's wanting the other, love is wanting the other person to be happy. It doesn't say anything about I'm involved or you're going out with me on Friday night or anything. I want you to be happy, right? Yeah, so that's very different, okay.
Well, this is with attachment. Could be attachment without exaggerating qualities of mm-hmm. another person?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. You remove that exaggeration.
Could be
you see things more realistically.
But if we remove the exaggeration, could be attachment?
If we remove the exaggeration?
Could be we're attached with something without the exaggeration?
I don't think that would be attachment if we see if we're not exaggerating.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the definition of attachment implies that we're exaggerating or seeing something that's not there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
It goes back to the attachment again. I thought one of the reasons that we get attached to things because we get resistant to the change.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want things to change.
Yeah.
And then when they change, when we get old, when we get sick, we get...
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
We can resist to the change. Things change. Nothing is permanent. Everything is impermanent.
Yeah.
But
yeah, we'll get to that. That's one of the major antidotes to dealing with attachment is understanding that things change. Yes. Yes. Yeah, thank you. So let's go back to Shankar.
Actually, those of you who are at the retreat, you may remember that Rinpoche actually spent quite a bit, that this exact question was given to Rinpoche. I don't know if you were there, people who were there at the yeah. on that day, but he spent quite a long time actually talking about relationships in the path, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I remember, I have to go back to my notes, if I remember correctly, he said that the most important thing that it has to be based on love and compassion, which mm-hmm. is different from attachment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So without trying to control the other person mm-hmm. or trying to make him or her be a kind of make them be the kind of person you want them to be,
mm-hmm.
right? So, but going back to love and compassion, I think what he was saying was that the love part is, and I think he uses exact words, was where you take delight in the other. Well, that's a textbook definition as well, but you take delight in the other's joy,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's it. No more, no less.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It doesn't
There's no
mean,
me in there, is there?
Right. There's no me in there. I love you because you make me happy. Right. So that part isn't there. It's just you're happy. I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the one. That's where he left it. I think, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. So, how many people think attachment is their friend? Does it get you what you want? Do you act like it's your friend? Yeah, I think we all think if we follow our attachments to good people, to pleasurable experiences, to monetary gain, that that's going to get us what we want, which at some deep level is happiness. But the Buddha says, no, attachment is not our friend. It is our enemy. It takes us in the exact opposite direction. It takes us towards suffering and unhappiness. And he gave us this model that we refer to a lot around here because it's so practical. I mean, there's nothing spiritual or woo-woo about this, but he talked about something that we have listed up here as the eight worldly concerns, or we could say, using Geshe Gelug's terminology, we could say the eight worldly complications. But it's most commonly referred to as the eight worldly dharmas. Does anybody know what the word dharma means? What's the definition of the word dharma? Not exactly. Susan Potter has her hand up.
The The original definition I learned was that which separates from suffering.
Yes, thank you.
But more recently, I've heard another word that I think encompasses it. It protects us from suffering.
Okay, right. Yeah, it separates us or protects us from suffering. Dharma is that which protects us or separates us from suffering. So the Buddha has outlined here eight worldly dharmas. He's being a little bit sarcastic or a little bit snarky here. He's saying this is people who live in the world think these are the things that are going to separate you from suffering. And it's quite ironic because they really don't. And it's a series of four pairs. On the to the left of the board, we have those things that we see as positive, things that we want more of, things that we try to accumulate. On the right side of the board, we have those things that we see as negative, as things we want to avoid, as things we want to have the least of as possible. So the first one is gain and loss. That could be monetary gain, gaining possessions, gaining anything. Loss means losing money, losing pleasurable experiences. The more gain we have, we think the happier we'll be. The less loss we have, the happier we'll be. Okay? Next one is pleasure. And its corresponding one is pain. The more pleasure we have, the happier we are, we think. The less pain we have, the happier we are. The next is fame, having a good reputation. And the balancing one is disgrace, or having a bad reputation. And the last pair is praise, hearing people say nice things about us, approving of us, telling us what a wonderful guy we are. And the opposite is being blamed, being criticized, hearing negative things said about ourselves. So if we're living our lives according to the eight worldly dharmas, which I posit that most of us are, we go through life, we think if we gain more, if we have more pleasure, more fame, more praise, that's the path to happiness. If we have less loss, less pain, less disgrace, people don't blame us, if we avoid those, that's the way to happiness. The more we have on the left side of the board, the happier we are. The more we have on the right side of the board, the unhappier we are. That's the way we live our lives. Now, what's the problem with that model for life? Let's see, we got a hand in the back. Do we have a mic? Yeah, thanks, Joan.
Well, I've come to realize, like, personally, when you go through loss, pain, and some of those other stuff, there's a lot of growth that comes from that.
Okay.
To get to the other side. So
okay.
It's not quite, you know.
So those experiences are not necessarily all negative.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see up here.
Oh, I think a lot of those is out of our control. To have a lot of those losses and the pains, it's things that we cannot control.
Yeah,
so
it's inevitable.
It's inevitable.
Yeah,
so
we will experience those, no matter how much we don't want to. Yeah.
It's just the difference in how you deal with them.
Okay. So do we have a second mic so we can have two mic runners?
But doesn't it go back to attachment of all of these? Because we're gaining money, but then we're trying to gain money, and then we're thinking, well, if we have more money, we'll have more friends. If we have pleasure, we'll, you know, it's pleasure, fame. It's all attachment to somebody else, and or the loss.
Yeah.
It's all attachment.
I mean, pleasure is nice, but if we're attached to it, you know, that has that, as we talked, as you mentioned earlier, that clinging quality, that craving, okay? Yeah. Let's hear what other people are thinking.
The ignorance that there are better things than those.
What are better things?
there are this kind of level of happiness.
Uh-huh.
But it's here.
Mm-hmm.
You could go further.
So there's a level of happiness beyond what's in that list.
Correct.
Okay.
So
okay.
I think the thing that we look for, because we don't have another view,
mm-hmm.
and but we start discovering that there are other things.
Yeah. These are the eight worldly dharmas. They're not the eight spiritual dharmas. Yeah, so these are the dharmas for worldly people, people who are immersed in the world. Yeah.
I was just thinking that, you know, all of those things up there on that board, we do something to gain money or to do, you know, gain pleasure, gain fame, gain praise. But most of the time it creates a negative mind stream, which creates like bad karma or negative karma,
mm-hmm.
which keeps us in a cyclic existence, which keeps us from also helping other people, other sentient beings. So it keeps us in this continual loop,
mm.
you know, just spinning around and around and around and around. And some people or some sentient beings, you know, go to extreme opposites for pleasure and hurt other sentient beings, which then causes really negative karma and rebirth. In future lives. So that's kind of my take on it.
That's heavy, yeah. Okay, anyone else? Okay. I mean, these are all great points. But you know, what we're talking about is, you know, there's nothing wrong with gain. There's nothing wrong with pleasure. There's nothing wrong with fame. There's nothing wrong with praise. Similarly, there's nothing wrong with things on the other side, but, you know, we like these. Okay, that's a fact. We can't deny that. You know, everything, you know, this gets into another topic, but everything we come into contact with, we either like it, we don't like it, or we don't care. Okay? We have pleasurable feelings when we come in contact with a nice-looking person. We have unpleasurable feelings when we have a bad-tasting meal. What determines that? Why do we have pleasurable feelings and unpleasurable feelings? That's our karma, okay? We have no control over that right now. For most of us, it's our past imprint actions of body, speech, and mind. So we do like things and not like things and are neutral about others. Nothing wrong with that. And we know that we like pleasure. We know that we like gain. We know we like to have a good reputation. We like hearing people saying nice things about us. Nothing wrong with that. That in and of itself doesn't cause problems. What causes problems is when we, as you said, start to crave these. When we start to cling to these, it has that needy aspect. I have to have these. And the more we cling to these, the more we push away what's on the other side, which we know will inevitably be part of our experience. That's just part of life. We will experience these, and the more we're clinging, craving, the more attached we are to these, the more horrible these appear, the more we can't stand to experience those when they inevitably occur. So we go from attachment to craving to clinging to this obsessive quality, and we can say that maybe the ultimate form of this is an addiction. Okay, not just to drugs or alcohol, but to pleasurable experiences where we have to have it, and we've actually, this is, I have got to have it, and if I don't have it, I am miserable. And that's attachment there. That's the extreme form of attachment, that I cannot live without this object, or this person, or this thing, or this experience. And that I cannot stand to experience anything on this side. I'm so attached to pleasure that the least amount of pain causes me to suffer incredibly. Okay? So nothing wrong with liking these. Nothing wrong with disliking these. I mean, being a Buddhist doesn't mean you want to experience pain, but it means accepting that that is an inevitable part of life and trying to push it away. What's inevitable, what is reality, is not going to help things. And trying to hold on to things on this side is not going to make them the true source of happiness. So that's really where the eight worldly dharmas get us, cause problems for us. I mean, the Buddha said, you know, I'm just telling you what I see. This is my experience. Check it up against your own experience and see if you find it helpful. And I think each of us will look at that and can find where we spend most of our time, or which one is the strongest for us. It's different for different people. I think, Don, correct me on this, that the fame and disgrace one is the most powerful one for most people. And that just doesn't mean, you know, reading nice things about yourself in the newspaper. That means having your partner think that you're a good person. Who's not attached to that? Okay? Or having your children like you. Okay? That's what fame means. It means people having a good opinion of you. And that drives an incredible amount of our actions for most of us. Okay? Any comments? Yeah, okay. Let's see in the back first.
So maybe this is a little too much, and I'm... Stop me at any point, please.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So attachment...
Stop.
That's good, Robin.
No, go on. Continue.
That's a good one. So attachment is at the top because it's related to all those eight...
Yeah, this is all about attachment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question is the whole point of appreciation, what value, all these things, like pleasure. If we are experiencing something that's pleasurable with respect to attachment, are we supposed to just be in the moment that we're experiencing that pleasure fully and enjoying that moment, but as soon as that moment is over, be okay with just completely just walking away from it and detaching our pleasurable memory and experience from that? Does that make,
that's where this discussion is leading. I think my response to that would be, does the attachment add in, make the pleasure greater? Or does it prevent you from enjoying it? Okay, if we accept that pleasure is a reality, that we can't have pleasurable experiences, is being attached to pleasurable experiences, does that make us happier or less happy?
When I was going back with before with the relationship thing, I guess I feel like, and this is maybe just my inexperience, but with respect to relationships, I feel like if you're not attached, if you're not invested all the time in this other person, then, or do you really love them? Is it real? Is that, because if you're okay with just them not being there, you don't have that attachment there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really love them? Is it real? Mm-hmm. And that's, I guess, it's a question for me. I don't know the answer.
Yeah. Anybody want to?
Maybe
jump
that's
in
just
there?
Our culture, our society here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, isn't that what romantic love is based on? Always wanting to be with that person, seeing them as the source of our happiness?
For me, I would say, you know, love, you know, first I have to love myself. It comes from within, you know?
And love means never having to say you're sorry. Oh, excuse me.
You know, that's how I would, you would attach, you're attaching that to someone else, how you feel, I guess, right?
Or mm-hmm.
That's not a good... I wouldn't say that's a good place to be, you know?
Mm.
Yes and no, but you'd have to love yourself fully first.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of realize that your happiness comes from there first, and then work it with the other person, kind of find that balance, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, okay.
I didn't mean for this to turn into like a relationship seminar.
No, that's fine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyone? Yeah, up here.
Mm-hmm. Let me throw that little comment you made.
Yeah, go ahead.
Years ago when my first class with you, and you were teaching this topic, and I think people were saying things like that. You know, how do we do that? How do we, mm-hmm. We're supposed to suffer because we're Buddhists. And you're like, okay, have the BMW, just don't get upset if it gets scratched.
Yeah.
And it was, I've never forgotten that. Like, enjoy everything, but just if it breaks, if it's whatever, then just deal.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
just thinking in, when you mentioned that these things are worldly things,
mm-hmm.
but let's see, for example, the pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
If the pleasure is going to never end,
mm-hmm.
I think could bring happiness,
mm-hmm.
or the fame,
yeah,
or the gain. If never ends,
mm-hmm.
I think it could be the answer.
Yeah,
but I think the problem is that it's not going to last.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm rethinking in terms of not a level of that is something low and high
mm-hmm.
with these things.
Mm-hmm.
It's more with the thing that is not going to be forever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
That's completely valid, and we'll talk about that some more. You know, we can cling to what's on the left side of the board, but if we're realistic, we know they are not going to last. So we project onto them a quality of lasting that, again, is something that they don't have. Everything on the left side of the board is impermanent, i.e. it's changing. Okay? And we'll talk about that some more. Vince?
So this is something that, I mean, it sounds a little trite, but to some extent this is a semantic thing, because getting used to particular the gravity of the word attachment in the Buddhist sense versus what non-Buddhist coming at it from kind of a Western perspective, being attached to somebody. I think in a relationship sense, that to me it means two things. And one of them kind of leads into the Buddhist sense, and one of them, well, anyhow, coming at it from a relationship perspective, losing the word attachment, but still carrying the sentiment of where I feel like you're going, largely means becoming dependent, like maybe a mutual dependence on that other person, and also having some levels of expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes you become dependent, and that's cool. It becomes like a mutual thing. You know that when and if anything's changed, I mean, like tragic car accident, you grow old and die, any other, you know, cascading list of unforeseen futures, will end in, you know, possible pain and heartache and sorrow and grieving and whatever else. But that's part of that commitment that you've made to each other, your willingness to be dependent on each other. But further beyond that, building these kind of expectations of what all that means, what that person, what you're willing to do for that, what the other person's willing to do for that, this gets into expectations. Expectations are a slippery slope, period.
Mm-hmm.
And neither one of those get into the fact that you're, like the very first definition, neither one of those get into the exaggerated attributes or qualities of that other person.
Mm-hmm.
You can build dependencies with somebody else. That's a choice that you make. You can have expectations. You'll probably be let down almost every single time. But neither one of those means that you have to be exaggerated, that person, you know, will or will not make you happy, or will or will not make you unhappy. Neither one of those get into that definition. So to some extent, I feel like some of the confusion that you're seeing here is something that I struggled with some time ago, is the word attachment kind of means different things in these different contexts,
mm-hmm.
and they are different subjects. But all that to say, to lead into a loving relationship where you build that with somebody else, you are getting yourself into something where you somewhat relinquish controls. You know that you're in for some kind of suffering, but you've chosen that with that person, period. And that does not have to mean attachment at all.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, let's see. Right. Okay, yeah, let's go here first.
I think that if we can understand that even if you have all those on the left, gain, pleasure, fame, and you do get some short-term happiness,
mm-hmm,
or,
yeah, mm-hmm,
you know, good feeling,
yeah,
but it's not lasting.
Mm-hmm.
So if you renounce to seek that, and, you know, try to find like more lasting or joy, mm-hmm. not happiness, but joy,
mm-hmm.
I think those, the power, you know, that they have, the delusion that we have regarding those things, mm-hmm. it just gets smaller and smaller.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, thank you. Hey, one more comment here, and then we'll continue on the discussion.
Well, I was thinking about our ego on the left side and our subconscious on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
Subconscious of, are we not worthy of money, or, you know, some type of thing negative about the loss or the pain, we deserve this pain, or the subconscious and the ego on the left side that the ego of on the left side, I can't
yeah.
think, I'm losing my train of thought here on that, but what do you think about that, those two dynamics of...
That's a possibility. This leads up to the next point. I mean, where does attachment come from in the Buddhist teachings? Where does attachment arise from? It's something Don mentioned in his meditation they led us through. Comes from the self-cherishing ego, okay, which is the sense of I, me, I need this, I don't want that. It's the self-cherishing ego that the Buddha said is our enemy. I mean, we think that the ego and our attachments are our friends. That's how we get what we want. And the Buddha said that this self-cherishing ego that has to be protected and fed and nourished above all else is the source of our attachments and all our unhappiness. Okay? Said, we need to flip that. We need to start cherishing others. But we live our lives. And this doesn't mean we're going through life thinking, oh, I'm the greatest, I'm the most wonderful. It's a quality of going through life thinking that of the ego demanding to be fed. That its interpretation of the world, of what it needs, what it wants, has to be satisfied above all else. And we live our lives according to the demands of our self-cherishing ego. And that's where our attachments arise. And we mistakenly think that the ego and the attachments are our friends, and they're not. They're the source of all our problems. So, if we want to get rid of our attachments, what do we do? What's the standard answer? If you're attached to something, you just
let go.
I mean, that's a bumper sticker. Yeah, just let go. What in the world does that mean? Do people know I don't know if it's true or not, how they catch monkeys in Asia, supposedly? Are people familiar with that? It's a cage. It has a coconut or something very attractive in it, and a little hole, and the monkey puts their hand through the hole and grabs hold of the coconut and is trapped. You know, the cage can be fairly big. And supposedly, I don't know, has anybody ever seen this? Don, have you ever seen this actually? Have you seen that?
I watch a lot of nature shows.
Yeah.
There was something to this that
yeah.
I read so, about, like where they are holding on to it so hard that they can't pull their hand back out, so they get trapped.
So they're trapped.
So
they would much. They would rather be trapped in cyclic existence rather than let go of the object of their attachment. So that's kind of the way we live our lives. You know, we're holding on to what we're attached to, even though if we just look around, we can say it's causing big problems for us. So the answer is let go. But it's not that simple, is it? What does let go mean? Anybody want to? In general terms, I'd like to hear what people think that means in general terms. It doesn't have to be Buddhist teachings, but what is letting go of attachments?
Equanimity.
Let's go over here, Susan. Yeah.
Well, it's just changing my mind.
Okay.
It's going, oh, this isn't working, let me do something different. So
okay.
it's renunciation.
Okay. Is that easy to do?
No.
Okay. Okay. In the back. Yeah, someone's got it. Thank you.
Hi. I see letting go as letting go of finding external sources to make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of trying to consume these things on the left side, you are okay without them and being content and happy without trying to find something to fill that.
Okay. Again, that's easy to do, right? Okay. How do we let go? Anybody want to take a stab at it? Okay, we say we just want to let go. Okay? How do we do it?
I used to make the mistake of letting go, meaning some big thing I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
But if life occurs actually in the moment, and I don't do this all the time, but if I'm really attached to something, the key is for me is to recognize how crazy it's making me.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, to do something that relieves that trapeze in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, I'm letting go, and then hopefully it leads to other moments of letting go.
Okay.
So I treat it by a moment thing. I'm crazy. I got to get on crazy. You know?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's letting go to me.
Yeah.
One thing that I do, I try to analyze anything that I'm attached to. If that thing, do I need this or do I want this?
Mm-hmm.
And if I really need this, it's one thing. If I just, it's just my attachment, if I want that but I don't need it, then for me it's easier to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
When I kind of make the difference between that.
Okay.
I've been thinking about something since this summer. It was something that came up on Facebook, of all places. But it's a picture of the Buddha, and it says, I am not what you think I am. You are what you think I am.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to use that to think about situations that I find difficult or when I'm trying to help somebody. It's something that I've been thinking about just constantly, and it helps me change my perspective sometimes so that I can approach the problem from a different
mm-hmm.
angle and maybe solve it.
Yeah. Certainly if we're attached to something, it's not what we think it is.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Other people that I talk to about this are always like, oh, no, it means just what it says it means. And I'm like, it's so much deeper than that to me, mm-hmm. I guess. So.
Okay. Thank you. And back of the room.
Oh, just. I do have a question.
Okay.
With the attachment, even though I said what I need or what I need, what I want, but it's very, for me, it seems easier to differentiate this or letting go and with my attachment and everything. But when it comes to a child, your child.
Mm, this comes up, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I can really detach, not let go of the attachment from anybody
mm-hmm.
with love and compassion for them, not just
mm-hmm.
but when it comes with your own child.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's So is attachment to a child a problem? Is it something that causes suffering? Yeah, let's talk specifically about that, the attachment between a parent and a child. For a minute, if anybody has something to say about that.
I was thinking of letting go of attachments and, first of all, understanding what's reality, what's true. Like,
mm-hmm.
what are the fundamental truths? So how do I find that through, like, meditation, sitting quietly, sometimes not doing anything, teachings, things of that nature. But, I mean, there's a lot of components to this, and it's a lot of practice. It's on a moment-by-moment basis, like seeing where I'm at in that moment and changing, like, what am I going to react on? How am I going to react to a situation? Letting go of an attachment also means to me, like, letting go of the results, like just doing the next right action, the next best action that I can do, and letting go of whatever's going to happen. So part of that is understanding, like, the impermanence, that things are going to be the way mm-hmm. they're going to be.
Absolutely.
Things are going to continue to change, like he was saying earlier. So, you know, that definitely helps me when I can, like, sit in quietness and meditate on, like, impermanence and, like, really just look at things. That's the best way that I can do it is through action and practicing that meditation. Like, sometimes I'll sit, and I think it was you, like during one of your Discovering Buddhism classes that we did this exercise where we sat there and we like thought about, you know, an object and how it's changed over a period of time. It could be a shirt or whatever, like where it came from, where it's at now, and where it's going, and it's constantly changing. Nothing is permanent. And that responds to everything, like your state of mind, what you're wearing, where you live, who's in your life, you know, who's not going to be in your life. Like, that's constantly changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anybody want to address the issue of attachment between a parent and child? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I guess that led me to thinking about parents who, like, they're a doctor, and they really, really want their son or daughter to follow in their footsteps, and they try to force them through their whole life, you know, to go in that direction when maybe they want to be something totally different, like who knows what. But I think there's levels to that, because I think obviously when you have a child, you need to meet their needs. You're raising them. You're sharing yourself with them and your experiences with them. And I think where it comes down to being attached, like if you feel guilty about, like if you had an argument with your child and then the next day you want to buy him a toy because you feel bad, that's kind of along the lines of like trying to make their happiness through this material means and or something along those lines, like just trying to control them. I think you can be detached from, you know, wanting them to, like, experience life in a way that's different from the way you experienced it and trying to force it on them instead of just allowing them to grow as an individual. And I think that's where you can practice non-attachment, is if they really want to do something that you're hoping they wouldn't, like you would want them to be successful in life, but they want to train horses or something like that for their career, like finding their own dreams and allowing them to grow as an individual and realizing that you can't, they're not like a piece of you that grew up outside of you. They are their own individuals and they have their own path to go on. And but I think it can be difficult because you love them and you want the best for them and you want them to be happy. And sometimes if I just know some parents go just too far with that, like trying, you know, or giving into their every demand because they want them just to be happy, but that's not going to lead to their happiness. Mm-hmm. It's going to lead to suffering if you just keep trying to, you know, give them what they want whenever they want it. Like,
yeah.
So it can get very messy. Like in any relationship, you know, in romantic relationships or just friendships or, you know, with your children, but with children, it's definitely a lot harder to untangle that knot.
Yeah. Be
more the attachment with the child, more in terms of the loss and gain.
Mm-hmm.
If you lose your child, or the fear of losing your child, or have her safety, that attachment I think is the most deep that you can have for a child. If she choose to be a doctor or to be, that's more like your ego. Then more like what you want her to be happy. If you really want her to be happy, she's going to be happy as a farmer, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the attachment to that the individual. And that is the hardest part, how you can detach. Because she's a human being, you know. Doesn't mean she's going to outlive you, you know. And how you can go on with that mind that, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
I was just going back to that core definition of attachment being something that can, attachment thinking that the other person, including your child, can make you happy. I feel as though it's a gift to someone else, including a child, to say, I can be happy by pursuing that through inner means, by pursuing my spiritual life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a gift to show, that's a gift to that child. to not be saying, you can make me happy.
Mm-hmm.
I it's hard to articulate.
No,
that.
Yeah. I mean, it falls into, we want to avoid sounding like we don't care. But again, it's that being clear on that over-projection of what even a child can do for us. Yeah. That child is not the source of our ultimate happiness throughout countless future lifetimes.
And
which is not diminishing the worth of the child or the closeness of that relationship. But I think romantic relationships, parents-children, there's a lot of projection going on. Lee, you're nodding your head. You want to say something?
I find that just recently somebody deliberately tripped my son at school and he fell and he hurt his arm. And so here, and my immediate reaction was not Buddhist at all. You know, it
this
just all
before
went
or
off.
After the retreat?
It was actually after the
retreat. Oh, no. Back into retreat for you.
Back into retreat. Robbie, does this have to deal with equanimity at all?
Oh, yeah, I'll get back. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, okay.
So I do find it more difficult to practice patience for my child than I do for myself, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a question about, does this have anything to do with equanimity? I think attachment prevents us from developing equanimity because we're attached to certain people, averse to others. So until we start dealing with some of our attachments, there's no true equanimity that we can develop. We're going to be running out of time shortly, so I just wanted to... We've talked about this a little bit, so just let it... Just let go. You know, it's like, just say no. It sounds easy, but it's not. There are multiple remedies or antidotes for attachment given in the teachings of the Buddha. I just wanted to touch on a couple of them. I mean, if we realize that we have an unhealthy attachment to a person or an experience or an object, one simple thing we can do is just avoid that experience. You know, if we know we have problems with alcohol, we shouldn't be going out to bars every evening. Just something as simple as that. If we have an unhealthy... you'll drink to that, Ron, is that what you said? it sounds ridiculously simple, but it is useful. You know, it's not the ultimate remedy, but it is helpful. If we have a obsessive relationship with someone, we shouldn't be checking their Facebook page 5 or 6 times a day. We shouldn't be stalking outside their house late at night and things like that. Not that anybody here has ever done anything, not that I've ever done anything like that. I don't know about the rest of y'all. Next thing is we can focus on the negative qualities. If we are attached to, again, we can use alcohol. That's an easy one to use. If we like to drink a little more than we should and look forward to it at the end of the day, we can, you know, actually sit and meditate on the negative qualities of it. You know, it makes us sleepy. We don't perform our best. It's destroying our health. We run the risk of getting a DUI, which will destroy our reputation. So we can do a serious meditation on the negative qualities of the object of attachment. A lot of people will think that, oh, that's just old gloom and doom Buddhism. But it's just being realistic. Okay, if we spend so much time exaggerating the good qualities, we need to spend some time realistically looking at the negative qualities. And similarly, if it's something that we're averse to, that we have this negative attachment to, we say, actually, that person does have good qualities. Let me meditate on the good qualities of that person at work who's driving me crazy. Okay, my experiences are not, you know, the negative qualities that I'm projecting onto them are not the reality. So we can focus on the negative qualities. We can And then we've touched on this one. This is really important. We can think about impermanence. And again, we're doing a definition, but impermanence in Buddhism doesn't mean that things come to an end, but it means that everything is changing. Okay? Nothing is permanent or unchanging. So whatever we're attached to, that person will inevitably grow old, will change. 20 years from now, they will not be the person that I'm attached to now. So impermanence is a huge antidote to attachment, both for the things that we crave and the things that we push away. And then the ultimate remedy for attachment is, as Chris said, you know, is seeing the emptiness of all phenomena, seeing that everything is a projection of our own mind. Nothing exists out there inherently. But that's probably a little bit beyond most of us now. But I think about it, the impermanence of the objects of attachment. But first we have to, you know, be clear on what we're attached to and convince ourselves that this is not the path to happiness, that attachment is not my friend, that it causes problems. Any comments or otherwise? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mic up here, please.
Well, it's related with this thing that everything is changing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we have the idea that it's going to change tomorrow or 1 month after or 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
But it's changing instantly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like things are disintegrating constantly.
It's like trying to hold water in our hands.
It's like probably we think, well, it's going to change tomorrow. Or,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, but it's not. It's just...
Mm-hmm.
The grass is not the same as yesterday, so it's kind of situation.
Everything is constantly changing, not just in the future, but right now. Yeah, whatever comes together, there are all these Buddhist sayings, whatever comes together falls apart. Meeting leads to parting. Birth leads to death. You know, we know every relationship is going to end with one person or the other leaving in one way or another. Okay, no relationship is permanent, but we project the quality of permanence onto, you know, our closest relationships. And that's just not seeing reality. So, you know, the opposite of attachment is detachment, which doesn't mean being cold or uncaring. Certainly doesn't mean being withdrawn. It means experiencing things in the moment to the fullest without these projections. Okay? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How about gratitude for either side, having that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if I need to explain it, but the loss, you know, have gratitude for that moment and learn from it, and gratitude from the gain instead of having it be an ego thing, just have a gratitude for it.
Yeah, not feeding the self-cherishing ego. Yeah. Okay. Anyone else? I think we'll do our closing prayers now. Who's listening to the discussion next week? Shanka. Okay, and you will be talking about, do we know yet?
Yes.
Okay.
How to deal with the election. Dharma way.
Okay. If anybody, Okay, if you have any attachments to how the election turned out, identify them, and Shanka will be, do we have to bring our passports? Okay, so we'll do our prayers on page 244. Let's see, we'll do a long life prayer for His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And let's see, then we'll do Ken Rinpoche down on the lower right. And then we'll do Lama Zopa Rinpoche. Let's do Shanti Deva first on page 246. Okay? May all beings everywhere plagued by sufferings of body and mind obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a wind down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth. May the forlorn find in happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be free from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find wealth and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. You can turn back a page. Prayer for His Holiness the Dalai Lama. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. Down the lower right for Ken Rinpoche. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Awatare, the one with great precision who spread... Lama ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. And now for Lama Zopa Rinpoche on the left-hand side. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Majjhana's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplish magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. Now, Green Tara's mantra. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Okay, thank you everyone for a wonderful discussion. Let's see, you want to say something, Jill, before? Okay. I'm changing my hat now. Now I'm the center director, okay? And I'm having words put into my mouth. I'm just a puppet up here. On behalf of our resident teachers, the board of directors, and myself, I'd like to welcome everyone to the launch of our 2017 annual appeal. Last year we asked you to come to the table, and you did, and we thank you. We balanced our budget last year and had a small surplus that includes sponsoring the Light of the Path retreat. And this year we ask you to fill your heart. That's the theme for this year's annual appeal. And you can fill your heart by giving as a monthly supporter, a one-time supporter, a service supporter, or an in-kind supporter. And last year we started the appeal with 70 monthly supporters, and this year I'm delighted we start our 2017 appeal with 90 monthly supporters. Yes. Thank you. And in 2017 we have big plans, including the Light of the Path retreat will be a month long this year. That's the longest event we have ever sponsored. We're going to increase support for our resident Sangha members. We're going to have our 25th anniversary gala in June. And we're looking at building a new storage shed out back with a satsa house where we can store little satsas that make. And we're going to give the center director 100% raise in salary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 2 times 0, yes. 2-0, yes. And an exciting part of the 2017 appeal is our Mani Mantra Pledge. You can benefit yourself and the center by pledging mantras. Then enter your account on our website so we can report to Geshe-la next year how many we recited. So that's really exciting. So people who love to recite mantras, you keep track of them, and Jill will talk about how to enter that on the web page. Many of you know we have an entirely new data system for our online community. How many people have signed up for that already? Great. Okay, good. Very important. We ask if you haven't signed up, go on it, enter your pledge of support and your own financial data. Because you cannot give automatically this year, your pledge donations, your...
You can give automatically, but we can't do it for you.
Yeah.
So you get to do it this time.
Yeah. Why don't you take over and explain that now?
We have it. Okay.
Or do you want me to keep reading?
No.
Okay. And soon we'll bring you skits and emails explaining how you can support our center in many ways. If for now we ask you to call 1-800-962-9868. Wait, that's WUNC. some of us have that drilled into our brain. No, really, it's as easy as finding a pledge form in the lobby, or we'll hand you one here. Yes.
So who has not received?
Carol Merrill will show us the pledge forms.
They all went out in the mail. So for anybody who knew or anybody who didn't get one, who needs an entire packet?
And then you can go to our online community and sign up. And for that effort, you will receive an attractive collectible mug.
Oh, nice.
Not a tote bag. Yes. Yes.
So excited. Last year's mug was blue. So
okay. Only, yeah, it says on the mug, only the development of compassion and understanding for others can bring us the tranquility and happiness we all seek. That's from His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Now we're going to empty this heart here so we can fill it up with your pledges.
Before we do that, let me just do this. Wait, one second.
This is well rehearsed, yes.
I just want to make sure that everybody understands because it's different. So it's really important. So those of you who give automatically, who just have it checked that we pull for you, now those of you who have your checks coming from your account, you're fine, right, because it's your own bank account. They just get sent in the mail. We love you. Those of you who we pull for you, whether it's check or MasterCard, Visa, debit, et cetera, they will all end December 31st, and the whole center could fall apart and fold. All of that will end, and it's a little scary because we have to make sure to get you signed on, you know, so that your pledges continue. So I did forget to put on the pledge form, like, if you don't do this, this will happen. So people who check, I'd like to continue my monthly support, I can go check it behind the scenes. But you are responsible this time. I can't enable you any longer. So I've been helping everybody, which is what we do. We take your credit card number and we secretly store it. So no longer, with the new way to do things, will we store any credit card numbers. They don't exist anywhere. You have to enter into the system. And then you can set up any way you want. You can check your account. If you did, I give last month. If you give one at a time, you can go in any day, check anything you want. So we want to make sure that, and I'll be saying this a lot through January, that you have to do it yourself. So I can help you with any of that.
So how do they do that? Yeah, what is it?
So you go to our website, and then you go to the annual appeal page, tells you how to do it, and then you sign on to, it's really Realm, but we're calling it our online community, and then you just get your password, set yourself up. It's just like anything else, like LinkedIn. You know, you can put your little picture in there, avatar, and once you get signed on, so the step is to get signed on, then to put your amount you want to give for the year, $100,000 into the pledge campaign, then set up your financial information. So to get onto the online community, pledge into the campaign, and then set up your own data. Does anybody have any questions about that? I'll help you too if you can see this information. We'll be doing it for a month.
Okay.
We're going to empty this heart.
Fill your heart with love today. Don't play the game of time. Things that happened in the past only happened in your mind, only in your mind. Oh, forget your mind and you'll be free. Yeah. Writing's on the wall. Free air, and you can do it all if you choose.
Just remember, lovers never lose, 'cause they are free of thought, impure, and of thought, unkind.
Robbie.
Gentle. Here's the show. Love is the mind.
Okay, on three, everyone's going back to Jill. Okay, thank you, everyone.
Yeah. Oh, happiness is happening. Friends have been led. Gentleness is everywhere. Fear is just in your head. Only in your head. Fear is in your head. Only in your head. Don't forget your head. On the wall. Free, yeah.
If you just say you want to sweep the floor, so this doesn't mean money. This also means service and in-kind donations. However you fill this out, you get a mug when you're finished. We want you to know that you're welcome at any level.
Okay, thank you, everyone.